Hello, I'm Jamie Isaacson, head baseball coach at Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois. And today I'd like to talk to you a little bit about some of the biggest problems that can occur when a young hitter is trying to hit the baseball. First thing I want to hit on is what's called a weak foundation. And the first problem that you'll see with a lot of young hitters is their feet is not in a great position. So let's hit on one of those problems right away. So oftentimes you'll see young hitters and they'll take that back foot and leak it towards the catcher or point it towards the catcher. What that is creating is a situation that is what we call a weak foundation, because if we were to take our feet and try to create a level or a situation where we're square up to the pitcher, what's happening is we're putting ourselves in a non-athletic position. Okay, you'll often see young women, young men, trying to create a situation where they open up to the catcher and lean back. With that foot wide open, you're going to get what's called a bad lean or a body lean, and you'll notice my shoulders, if I do it, open it up to you, you'll notice my shoulders are in a situation where everything is leaning back, and quite frankly, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure this is not a very good athletic position. So with that weak foundation, the things that we try to hit on is we'll just drop the bat, try to get it at a 90-degree angle to the pitcher, and we'll ask our young hitters to basically square up with their foot and then go ahead and get in their stance, all right? So now we know, okay, this is my 90-degree angle. This is where I want to be. This is where I want my back foot to be. Along with our feet, as I go down and get this bat real quick, along with our feet, as we create that 90-degree angle, if they're struggling with that, what we'll do is we'll pigeon toe them. We'll actually say, find the first baseline and point your big toe right down the first baseline. Now get in your stance. What they've done is create a situation where they had to get a little wider, which is never a bad thing. We talk about strong base. We talk about the ability to work off of our backside. This is a good thing where they have to go down to create that athletic position. Now, with the feet, from the backside, if we do create that 90-degree angle from the pitcher, with that front foot, we don't want it flying open or flying out. So what we want to do is create another 90-degree angle with the pitcher and allowing our hips to lock in on the pitcher. And during that stride as what we call the load, as we stride, you'll notice that as I open up, basically I want to create now a 45-degree angle to the second baseman. If I was hitting from the left side, it would be a right toward the shortstop, that 45-degree angle towards the shortstop in unison to where the pitcher is. So to create that strong base, and some drills that we will use is, one, putting that bat down we talked about. The other one, to make sure that we're in an athletic position and a good, strong foundation, is we'll put tennis balls underneath the right heel and we'll put it underneath the left heel so that they get the feel and flow for where their weight and where their distribution has to be. Now, as we talk about that foundation, we talked about the feet, let's talk about the knees. Oftentimes, you'll see an athlete that look like they'll duck walk or they'll have their knees rotated out or what's called pronated out, which means, rather than subnate, which means in, pronate, which means out. And when you pronate, what happens is you always have forward lean. We talked about always wanting to have a strong base. We talked about the feet trying to be in unison or 90 degrees with the pitcher. So with the knees, what we want to create is a nice flexion or an inward motion, a subnated look to our knees, rather than pronated. Because when we pronate, all of our weight goes down and our head and our body will lean forward. Some things that you can do so that happens. Ask them to get in their stance and bang their knees as close as they can right before their stance. You'll see a lot of major league hitters do this. You'll see Albert Pujols do this. I'll try to create him a little bit, but he'll squat down a little bit so he knows it's just a mental reminder for him to put him in a situation that allows his feet and his knees to be in what we call an athletic position. Other things you can do with your knees to make sure they're in an athletic position is, rather than getting up there and saying, okay, this knee's bent and this knee's bent, okay, I'm in an athletic position, is walk up to the plate. You'll see a lot of major leaguers do this. They'll walk to the plate. Look down, visualize, and go. If you'll notice, 99.9% of us do not walk around while we walk with our knees locked out. Most of us have that flexion in our knees and allow ourselves that natural movement that gets us from point A to point B. You'll see a ton of hitters do that. Just walk up naturally, relax, and then go get in your stance. And what you'll find is, as you find yourself as a hitter, as an athlete, you will put yourself into that athletic position. So, the things that we like to work on and hit on and identify early from a situation where there can be a weak foundation, okay? As we talk about the feet, we want them in a situation that is square and parallel or in a 90-degree angle to the pitcher, all right? And we want to make sure our knees are in a situation where they're at about the same level, but they're flexion. We're in an athletic position. We can move left or right, forward or back, up or down. That will allow us to create a strong foundation with our hips. Oftentimes, that weak foundation comes from an open or flared front side, or what we call an overdo. We'll close off our backside and close off those hips and create another situation where we will be in a weak foundation to hit, because the first movement that we're going to do is fly open. What we want to do is stay locked in with the hips. So something we will do, and you probably have often seen, is we'll lock the bat in and around behind us and say, okay, where's the pitcher? Point the knob to the pitcher. Now take a look at your hips. Let your hips work in unison with the ball and the pitcher. Because if we were in a weak situation, a weak foundation with our hips, even though our feet are in a good situation and we're rolling into the ball, I'm ready to hit, you'll notice this is not a very good athletic position to one pick up the ball, and what it's going to lead to is our first movement is going to be out and around to get to that point. Or if we're too open, where's the knob at? You notice it's pointed at the third baseman. It's not pointed at the pitcher. So take that young athlete, whether it be on the softball or baseball field, and go ahead and point it right to the pitcher, lock those hips in, and create yourself a nice strong foundation to hit from. Another problem that often occurs in young hitters is what we call the hip slide. And oftentimes what will happen is, and I'll try to demonstrate it so that you can see at a better angle, is if you focus in on this back part of my hip, as that hitter tries to come through, their first thing that they do is they throw their hip towards the baseball or towards the pitcher. Well, we call that the hip slide. Well, what that will do is this. It will take and lock up a hitter's natural motion around his or her core. Now, you'll often see hitters that want to be so aggressive take that hip and throw it at the pitcher, and there'll be a lot of what we call Punch and Judy hitters, because they'll be so far out front, they'll never ever catch the ball deep, and they'll just be a contact hitter spraying the ball up the middle and oftentimes rolling over it to the corner infielders and getting themselves out more often than not what the pitcher gets them out. So how do you stop the hip slide? One thing that we like to work on at Knox College is putting ourselves in a good strong base, which we have talked about many times before, and then allowing ourselves to catch the ball with our back hip. We never, ever, ever want to isolate our front hip when it comes to hitting the baseball. Naturally, through repetition, through athletic movement, through athletic ability, you're going to find that all young hitters, mature hitters, are going to clear that front side. So, how do you isolate that back hip? The one thing that we'll do is we'll grab some Nerf balls, some softballs, some tennis balls, and what we'll do is we'll put them in our stance, we'll put the bat down, we'll put them in their stance, and we'll throw a baseball at their back hip. And the one thing that we want to do is if they're sliding, they'll notice that what we're trying to do with that ball, excuse me, is catch the ball out in front of our hip. Down and catch the ball out in front of our hips so our hands and our hips work together. We'll try to catch it out front. If they're hip sliding, they'll catch the ball behind them, trying to get positive or negative reinforcement from the very first drill that we do. So as I'm sitting at that angle down the first baseline to a right-hand hitter, and I throw the ball right at that back hip, if that first movement is forward and we slide those hips, they're going to catch that ball behind them. And hopefully, as repetition will dictate, that they start realizing, okay, I got to stay back catch. I got to stay back catch. I got to stay back catch. Another drill that we'll do is we'll grab a bat, okay? And what we'll do is this. We'll ask them to put their hands right at their hip, okay? We'll put the bat there, and we'll lock it in right on their hip and make them, with their front arm, stay right there. And then, conversely, what we'll do is we'll throw the ball right at the bat. As long as they're not hip sliding, if they hip slide, what's going to happen? They're going to miss the ball with the bat. If they're not, if they're just striding, taking that natural, quick motion, the ball will hit the bat. Now, obviously, a coach or another student athlete or what have you working with you might not hit the bat all the time. That's okay. That's why we don't use baseballs on this drill. That's okay. But we're still reinforcing, am I hip sliding? Am I taking my hip and doing that dance movement? All right. Or am I locked in, making sure that I'm rotating around it? And all we're doing is asking them is just go forward. Don't move. Go forward. Don't move. Go forward. Don't move. Along with the hip slide, why is hip slide bad? Why can't that happen? I can see Jimmy or Johnny or Sally, they have a little bit of a hip slide and they hit the ball really hard, coach. Well, what happens when you hip slide is this. As you throw that hip forward, like all of us here on earth as humans, our head is going to follow the largest weight distribution in which we just moved, our movement. I.e. when you start walking, your head follows that right foot that just went forward. So as you take that hip slide, your head's going to follow, which means your eyes are moving, which means you're creating a situation where the ball is coming faster at you and what it really is propelled at you, because your eyes are moving forward, creating an optical illusion, allowing the ball to come on you quicker. And the biggest problem as you hip slide is this. When you hip slide and your head comes forward, you call you create a situation what's called a lockup, because as you hip slide and now all your weight's on the front foot, now you're not able to rotate what we call the back axis. You're not ready to rotate around the ball, or through the ball. What you're doing is coming around the ball because your head is going to follow your weight distribution to your front side, and it's never ever going to allow you to clear your hips and allow you to swing around your core. You're going to swing through and out the ball, which was going to allow for you to come over the ball, which is, quite frankly, if you take a look at that swing, as I come around the ball, I'm sure most of us will never want to teach anybody to hit that way. So, as we isolate the hip slide, the thing that I would like to reiterate is this. Make sure the athlete identifies that, you know what, throwing my hips at the ball is not necessarily a good thing. Isolate that. Try to videotape it. Try to show them through those ball drills that I just showed you. Try to let them know that, okay, we've got to work off the backside, not the front side. Okay? And then, when that happens, if they're still hip sliding, widen them out. Widen them out. Widen them out to the point where you're not even in an athletic position anymore. And you put yourself, you can see like a Jeff Bagwell or even an Albert Pujols who's super wide. All of a sudden, if they hip slide, there's no way they can swing. The only thing they can do is throw their hands at the ball. And in all reality, that's what we're trying to create. Take a couple of these drills, isolate hip slide, don't let that problem occur. Now another problem that we often identify at the college level. I see high school hitters all the time, and I really see it on the Little League baseball and softball diamonds all over the country. And what that's called is called head tilt. Good head tilt and bad head tilt. Let's talk a little bit about it. Bad head tilt. All right? So you see that good hitter, nice, strong athlete. She's ready to go. She's ready to drive the base softball wherever it's pitched, or he's ready to drive the baseball wherever it's pitched. And you're thinking, man, ooh, I like this kid. And all of a sudden, they put their head down. That is what's called bad head tilt. And what happens is what we call Mr. One Eye, okay? So if you could stay with me for just a little bit. As I get in that stance and I've got a nice spine angle, and all of a sudden I take this good head tilt, which is allowing me to see the baseball or the pitcher with both of my eyes, i.e. complete vision, okay? What you're going to find when you head tilt and that head goes away from your core, away from your shoulder, here's what happens. All of a sudden, as I look at you right now, I'm seeing the bridge of my nose. So if I'm seeing the bridge of my nose as my head comes down and it tilts, there's no possible way in which I'm going to be identifying a ball, whether it's being propelled to me at 90 miles an hour from 60 feet 6 inches in baseball, or 75 miles an hour from underneath from about 45 feet in softball. There's no way that optically I am trying to tell my brain exactly what I'm seeing, exactly how am I going to swing or am I not going to swing. So how do you not create that head tilt? Okay, there's a lot of things that a lot of people will tell you. What I like to tell our athletes is this: put yourself in a situation that if you were going to run to the pitcher and you had to take one step and you had to take that back step to the pitcher, your head's got to be in position. So if I was in a head tilt position, I said, okay, now step to the pitcher. Don't move your head, step to the pitcher. They can't do it because what happens is they're going to fall and lean over. Now, I'm going to ask them to do it at full speed. If their head is in a proper position or their head is sitting on the shelf of their shoulder and they're in a really strong athletic position to hit a baseball and say, okay, now step to the pitcher, it's all forward and their head is in an athletic position. Now, obviously, ask your athletes to do that at full speed, and you'll find that if their head is tilting, that what's going to happen is this, is they're going to step towards first, and then they're going to step towards you to the pitcher. Now, the other thing you'll find with the head tilt is a lot of guys will put their chin on their shoulder to make sure that looks good, and what happens is it creates a bad shoulder tilt. It went from head tilt to shoulder tilt. Now, does this look very athletic and relaxed? No, it does not. So, coach, how do I get that athlete to make sure both eyes are locked in on the pitcher, but yet not straight up and look like we're posing for the old senior photograph? Here's what we like to tell our athletes. Put your eyes down to the ground, focus on something on the ground, and then say both of them to the pitcher. Now, I did that right there, and what I found is my nose went right to the pitcher. And if you'll find that your nose goes right to the pitcher, you'll find that your eyes will go right there. Now go to your stance. We'll do it again. Focus in on something. Now take your nose to the pitcher. And now my head is in and my spine angle is in a natural position. I refocused the focus, and the focus was making sure that my head wasn't tilted over, that I wasn't in a situation that I was in a bad athletic position. All of us have been on the ledge trying to do all that stuff. That's basically what we're creating. So I took the focus of both eyes being out to the pitcher, and I created a refocus. I went down, got in my stance, focused in on something, created relaxation with this little bat swing I'm working on, and then I say to myself, focus. Boom. Just that little drill time and time again is going to allow that athlete the ability to take both those eyes and take them right to the pitcher. Now, you'll find, and okay, we talked a little bit about the bad shoulder tilt, that thing leaning back to the catcher. You never really want that chin sitting, I call that shoulder shelf. You never really want that chin really sitting on the shoulder, okay? So how do we work on that? How do we get from point A to point B so that they're not over tilting or over casting their head or their eyes to the pitcher? Well, what I like to do is this, is on that refocus drill, we take the bat out of their hand, we drop it up forward, we get in our stance, we're trying to refocus, and when we go from refocus to focus, we take our hand and put it right on our bill. And you'll notice that if my head was tilted, if I do this with a head tilt, that they'll notice, oh my goodness, if I take my hat off, they'll notice that it's going towards the first baseman. Compared to refocus, refocus, up, there it is. I can tip my hat to the pitcher, all right, as I round the bases after I hit a home run. I'm in a situation where everything's out front. It's a couple of little things like that. And once again, use video, okay? Take mom and dad's camcorder, videotape yourself a little bit to allow yourself to see where you're at and where you want to be. Remember, head tilt. Bad, why? Because as the heaviest part of your body is going to follow your head. So if my head is tilted down and I visually can't see the baseball coming at me the way I was intended to see a baseball with both eyes or a softball with both eyes, that my body's going to follow my head, which means I'm leaning forward. And as I lean forward, as it ties into that hips and feet tongue thing we talked about, as far as a weak foundation, it all lends itself. Now I lock up and I go from there. Isolate on head tilt. Remember, refocus to focus. Make sure the bill of the helmet or the bill of the hat, your eyes and nose are at the pitcher. Find the baseball, find the release point, hit the baseball. Now let's talk about a major problem from major league hitters all the way down to little league hitters, and what's called casting, or what we call around the ball. Okay? If you'll notice my motion, I'm casting it like I was fishing, like I was throwing the lure out in the middle of the lake. Now, why is that a bad thing? Well, number one, it creates a level swing. Something that I isolate on with our athletes is what we try to do is stay away from a level swing because it creates a bubble. And if you can see my bat, it's creating a bubble over the ball. Okay? So as I cast out, as I throw my hands out around the ball or to the ball, as I come around it, you'll notice how far my hands and my bat and my arms are away from the core of my body. And what we're trying to accomplish is a swing that is around our core of our body, from our hips to our shoulders. So, casting. Why does it happen? Well, one, it happens because you bar arm, okay? A situation where you take your hands out of the box and you allow them to go back. Now, you're saying, I've seen a lot of major league hitters, coach, take their hands and take that back. You do, okay? But what oftentimes happens is this. They've done that movement so many times that it becomes a trigger for them to throw their hands right back where they started. What we want to teach, since I'm not working with professional athletes on a given daily basis, is a situation where we keep our hands in the box and we allow ourselves, when we do load, to stay in and around the box. And that's not necessarily in, but in and around the box, so that when we do swing, we create a situation where we can take the knob of the bat to our front big toe, okay, and we can throw the barrel down and through, creating a sweeping motion, okay? So how do we stop that casting, all right? How do we get from bar arming it back to creating that nice, strong front arm trigger as it's cocked and loaded to down and through? How do we get there? A couple things that we like to do at Knox College is this, and you'll see it from every ballpark around the country, is this. We'll go up to a fence or a wall, all right, and we'll stand up against it, just like this one right here. And as we stand there, the thing that we'll try to do is ask them to swing, and as they swing, not hit the fence or the wall behind them, all right? if you'll notice, and I'm going to try not to cause too much damage, is as we swing and hit, if we're casting and throwing our hands out, you'll notice I'm hitting the wall. I can't get through. But if I'm pulling it down and through, I get through to the baseball. Now, another thing that we'll do, okay, is we'll put that same wall, all right, and we'll belly the bat to the wall. So you got to imagine that right now, so I don't put my back to you, that I'm putting that belly to the wall and creating that. Right now, I've got a 33-inch bat in my hands, 33 inches away from the wall, and we'll swing with, once again, not trying to hit the wall or the fence, which will allow our hands and will create a situation where we're constantly staying down and through, inside the ball. You'll see and you'll hear coaches, keep your hands inside the ball. Well, what does that mean? Because you still can cast, hit the ball here, and your hands might be in position to being inside the ball. What I believe they're really saying is this, is they are trying to make sure that the front arm of any swing, whether it's a golf swing, a softball swing, a baseball swing, is that the front arm stays as close to the core as possible in unison with where the pitch is being made. Now, obviously, sometimes they're going to have to take that front arm and let it leave the core a little bit to get out over the outside corner, or they have to reach. Okay? But you'll notice that I'm not way up out leaving my core. So when coaches, myself included, say, hey, Zach, hey, Sally, hey, Billy, keep your hands inside the ball on this swing, what we're really talking about is not casting to the ball, but what we're trying to do is create a swing through and around our core, making sure that that front trigger arm stays tight and around our core, our body, our torso. Okay, so when you hear that, that's basically what we're all trying to get to, so that we don't get out and around the ball, so that that curveball doesn't mess us up, or that rise ball doesn't mess us up, so we're all the way up here and we can't adjust. Because the closer our hands are the closer our hands are to our core, the thing that you're going to find is the ability to adjust the bat angle to the ball. Because it is so close to our core, you can move them to make contact with the baseball. And since the object is to hit that round ball with a round bat square on the barrel, you're going to need to have the ability to adjust those, those millimeters, or just the minuscule little movements to take the barrel to the ball. If you're out here with it, it's not going to happen. Now, we talked about a couple drills that will allow you so that you do not get casting or out. All right. Here's another reason why you don't want to cast or get out and around the ball. It is longer and slower to take the barrel to the ball that way. So if you follow right now, and I'll try to create an angle so you can see, if you follow my barrel as it comes out and around and through to get to that ball right there, the travel time of that barrel is a lot longer than that motion right there. Any science teacher will tell you, any math teacher will tell you, the easiest way from point A to point B is a straight line. So when that coach tells you, don't cast, keep your hands inside the ball, that's what they're talking about. They want you to take the barrel from point A, which is your launch point, naturally, hands inside the box, to point B, which is the baseball. If you are casting, basically, you're taking the whole alphabet and scrambling them all over the place, hoping that you're making contact. So remember, don't cast out. Don't go slow to the ball. Go quick to the ball. People say be short and quick. Be short and quick to the ball. That's what they're talking about, keeping their hands inside the ball, allowing that knob of the bat to go down and through to your big toe, right to the connection point. Now, one more drill that you can implement, and oftentimes I'll see softball coaches teaching this, in their practice swings. They will take their hands, they'll grab their jerseys, and try to make an X with the imprint of their jersey. So if you follow Knox College and see the swoosh, that if I had a marker on this thumb, as I create an X with my jersey, notice the motion that I'm creating. I'm creating a downward, taking the knob to the knob to my front toe, creating that ability. Whew, I just created an X on my jersey from the imprint of what team I'm on. You'll see a lot of softball swings do that. They'll pull through, pull through, pull through. Matter of fact, I took it from our softball coach at Knox. That drill right there is to create the X through your jersey. Because oftentimes we'll get big, strong power hitters that want to go out and around rather than stay tight down and through. Remember, a couple fence drills. Create the X drill with your hands. Don't cast, go out and around. That's going to be long and slow. Remember, you want to be short and quick to the ball, which is going to allow you more ability to adjust to the pitches that as you grow through your legs, fastballs, curveballs, change-ups, risers, to make those fine adjustments that we all have to make when we're trying to make good solid contact with the baseball or softball. Now let's talk about one of the biggest problems that you'll often find at the youth levels or the lower levels, whether it's softball or baseball, what I call ball versus me, okay? The fear of the baseball, that's what I'm talking about, or the fear of the softball, that's what I'm talking about. That fear of, you know what, this thing being propelled at me could hurt. And quite frankly, at times, it might. And that's one of the things we've got to get through, that fear. And it has to be practiced. I think it can be a learned trait. Doesn't have to be natural. You'll find young girls and young boys all over this country or all over this world that are, quite frankly, not afraid of the ball. But you'll also find nice young athletes that are afraid of the ball. So how do we get there? How do we get to that point where they're not afraid of the baseball or softball anymore? The things that we'll do at Knox College is we'll grab Nerf balls, we'll grab tennis balls, we'll grab Incrediballs, and we'll put them in our batting practice buckets. And as we're doing short toss or underhand toss, is that when we grab down and grab that tennis ball or Incrediball in this drill so it hides, it looks like a baseball, is what will happen is we'll throw it at them, okay? And we'll want them to practice protecting themselves from that ball hitting them. And one way to get there is this, is as you take that stride and you notice that that ball could frankly hit you, what we want to do is put our whole backside to the baseball and eliminate the surface area on our body in which we could get hit or hurt. And the first mistake that's made is, when I say ball versus me, is this, is open up to it. If you'll notice, my head, my torso, all right, are open to the ball. I could really get hurt right here, okay? It's going to cause some damage. What we want to do is practice, make it a learned trait rather than an instinctive trait, where we turn away from the ball and create a situation where our heel, our calf, our hamstring, our buttocks, our back, and our helmet are to the baseball. Now, young boys and girls, I know, you know what? That hits in the ribs. It's going to hurt. But I promise you, back here, where you have more muscle layer, where you will be hiding your rib cage a little bit more, all right? And we all know this is a little softer back here than other areas. That is going to allow you to play the next play rather than opening it up to your core and taking one on the ribs or right on the old schmush, as we like to say. So we practice that. We take those balls and make sure they turn in. Make sure they're turning in. If there's a large hip slide, if there's a head tilt, if they are in a weak foundation, you're going to find that your young hitters, softball and baseball alike, they're going to be opening up to the pitcher rather than locking into the pitcher. That what happens is this. That's when they're going to be in a bad situation. If they get hit with that Incrediball a couple times right here, they're going to find themselves staying back and going from there. Now, from that ball versus me, once, and hopefully everybody creates that fear or gets rid of that fear, We always want to respect the baseball, okay? Because the baseball being propelled in baseball at 90 miles an hour or 75 miles an hour from 45 feet in softball, it can't be dangerous, okay? That's why there are protective helmets nowadays, and that's why Barry Bonds and the like wear all that Under Armour or that big old gear on their elbows or on their feet or whatever the case may be. It can hurt, but the thing we want to do is respect the ball. The thing that we want to do is learn from the pitcher that's pitching against us. How do we create that? We find release point. Instead of reading the bubblegum wrapper or talking to our buddy in the dugout, we're following the pitcher, we're finding that release point, so that puts us in a better position, in a state of mind, a more comfortable mental position, so that when we get there, we know exactly where the pitcher's releasing from. We know exactly, because our mind has trained us to find that release point and know that, you know what, if this release point's over here, you know what, that ball might be coming to me. And it's going to create a situation of not necessarily comfort, but a situation of, you know what, this doesn't look right. I better hide myself and get out of the way. It can be a practice trait rather than an instinctive trait. Now, as we get rid of that fear of the ball, as we've been hit by it before and we survived and we got to run to first base, and we got the reward to steal second or come home and score a run. Once we get over that fear, we're always, you hear coaches talk about, let the ball get deep. What does that mean? Well, oftentimes young, good, aggressive athletes will want to hit the ball so far out in front of them that they end up casting the bat or they end up missing the ball because they're so darn early. What we like to teach at Knox College and what my father used to teach me was try to catch the ball with your back hip and or your back knee, which will allow the ball to travel farther to you so that as you create your swing, as you get rid of that fear, you're going to allow it to come in, to get down and through the ball, and as you catch it on that hip or catch it deep on your knee, you're going to have the proper swing path to allow the ball to get deeper rather than all the way out front. If you notice, as I catch the ball deep, I'm in a bad power position. I'm in a weak position compared to, ooh, now there's a strong position. Try to take that bat out of my hand. I'm going to hit it hard. When coaches talk about catching it deep, letting the ball come to you, wait on the ball, okay? You'll hear that oftentimes at a lot of Little League baseball and softball parks. Wait on the ball, Alex. Let it get to you. What they're really trying to say is, let it get deep so that you can catch it at its optimum point. Okay? My optimum point with all our young hitters is this. Take that right hand, take that right hip, and have somebody throw that ball to you. And try to catch it right at your hip, right before your hip, right before your hip, right before your hip. And then go ahead and put the bat in the right hand and go ahead and try to catch it with your left hand, right in front of the hip, right in front of the hip. Are you going to be successful every time catching the ball? Probably not, but that's not the point. The point is you're training your mind, you're training your body, muscle memory, to catch the ball deep, to allow yourself to make contact at the optimum point, which is within the power V, which we have talked about. So, as you get rid of your fear of the baseball, but always creating the respect for the baseball, as you learn to roll into the baseball so that if it does hit you, you try to limit injury or you reduce the surface area in which can limit injury, you start allowing the ball get deep and you'll be on your way to becoming a better hitter on your softball and baseball fields, because now you're allowing yourself the area in which you are going to maximize, the area in which you are going to hit the ball at the proper maximum contact point. One of the last things I want to talk to you about as far as trouble problems that can occur within the baseball swing is too much. Too much top hand, too much bottom hand. Let's start with too much top hand. You'll often see young hitters and quite frankly old hitters that want to take that top hand and squeeze the life out of the bat. And what happens when that occurs, even if they have a good solid foundation, they're working to let the ball get deep, is as they come over and as they roll over to the ball, you'll notice that my right hand dominates the swing so much that I'm creating a loop in my swing. As I get here, you'll notice as I rotate over, as I roll my wrist, it's coming over the top. That's what we call too much top hand. Oftentimes, you'll see too much bottom hand. That's where that hitter is so relaxed. He's squeezing the tar out of it with his bottom hand. And what happens is, because they lead so much with their front elbow and take their elbow away from the core, is oftentimes you'll hear parents say, "Whoo, he really dipped on that one." Well, that's when they're too much of a bottom hand hitter, is that they'll dip and watch my barrel here, they'll plumb bop it. And then they'll lead through with that front elbow. And you'll notice that the bottom hand is just a guide hand. And more than likely, I'm assuming nobody wants to coach that swing right there in that weak position. There's no power V there. So when I talk of too much top hand over the top, or too much bottom hand plumb bopping, how do we change that? Well, you've been watching this video, you're finding that, you know, you can go up to the wall, you can get back there and make sure that you don't hit over it, making sure your hands stay in the ball. You can do the old belly drill on the wall, where you keep your hands inside the ball. Things that we like to do to make sure that we become two-hand swingers rather than just bottom hand, rather than just top hand, leads to our hands. We'll line those knuckles up. We'll create the three bottom finger squeeze and the top hand two squeeze with the index and thumb. And what we'll try to do, and we'll grab wiffle ball bats. Everybody's probably seen the old 1950 yellow wiffle ball bats. We'll grab a couple of those at your local Target, Walmart, or anywhere else. And what we'll do is we'll ask them to swing at a ball and throw the bat at the ball. And what you'll find is that with that drill, as you throw the bat down to the ball, is that you use both hands. More than likely, because your mind will not allow you to throw the bat around and through with your top hand, or drop it up and throw it up with your bottom hand, that movement of throwing that bat to the ball, and it can be a baseball, a softball, a wiffle ball, doesn't matter. As you throw that bat just down and just throw it right to the guy tossing you, or right to where the pitcher would be with the tosser over to your side, that both hands are being used. That you are not dominating the swing with either hand. Oftentimes there are hitting instructors out there that will isolate bottom hand hitting or top hand hitting. That doesn't mean they're wrong. I teach bottom hand hitting. What I teach is the ability for this top hand to guide over so that it stays in a strong power position. This is not too much top hand. That's too much top hand. This is not too much bottom hand. This is too much bottom hand, because now I'm pulling it through and around and taking my power, my trigger, around my core, off my core. Now, what else can you do to help yourself in regards to how do I become a two-hand swinger within the concepts of what you're trying to teach within the swing? If you've ever played hockey, you'll find that hockey sticks are a little different than a baseball bat. They're basically a square, okay? If you grab that hockey stick, your hands go right to this position where your knuckles are lined up, okay? In a bat, you can club it because your hands can rotate around the bat. If you'll notice, when I go around the bat or I club hand it, my wrist will start rotating around the bat, which puts me in a weak, not a very powerful position. If I do get to load my wrist, this is called a wrist road, within the trigger of our arm, is what happens is as I put my hand on, you'll oftentimes see somebody come over the top, all right? And now, rather than load their wrist, they're around the bat again. If you can line those knuckles up, what you'll find is your mind will allow your hands to work in unison to create good wrists. Scouts, coaches, they all want to see good wrists within a swing. And that doesn't mean too much bottom or too much top, which could mean this or this. What you're looking for is that whip of the bat. How do we get there? By lining those knuckles up, what we've called knocking knuckles, the second digit on your fingers, and lining them up, and just by human nature alone, it's going to allow you to create that natural movement down and through the ball, allowing you to swing with both hands, even though in my style of hitting, I want that bottom hand to go around our core, but I can't take the top hand off. Another drill that you can use, and one that we find with the younger guys better than the older guys, is this, is we'll take a basketball and or a weighted medicine ball, and we'll put it in our hands and throw it 4 feet out in front of us trying to hit a dot on the floor. We'll just take a marker or a grease board marker that comes wiping up, or a piece of tape, put it 4 feet out in front of us, and we'll throw it right to the ground with that ball. If you dominate with the right hand, it's going to come off. You dominate with the left hand, it's going to come off. If you're dominating with both hands, right to the dot. Remember, too much is not a good thing. You want to be a two-hand swinger, even though you're going to come across top hand techniques, bottom hand techniques. You never, ever want to make sure one dominates the other so much that you're creating bad habits. Take these drills, identify these problems, identify your mechanics within your swing so that you become a better softball and baseball hitter. Good luck, and don't stop working hard.